Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Goals on Film, Enter the Crowd's dedicated sports movies podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and I've got Lauren joining me for this week's episode. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. I'm just really excited to talk about one of my favorite Disney movies.
Awesome. Well, let's get into the episode itself. And this week we're taking a look at 2002 biographical basketball film Double Teamed. The film is based on the life stories of twin sisters Heidi and Heather Burge, with the film focusing on their upbringing, namely throughout their high school years. The sisters begin as volleyball players at Coast Christian Private School before their dad transfers them to Palos Verdes High School in an effort to be noticed by more scouts. However, while at the high school, Heather stumbles upon the basketball team and is asked to consider playing by the team's coach. Eventually, she does try out, with Heidi also making the team at her dad's request, as the two become a formidable force on the court, even if they have to work through their differences. The two's rivalry with each other and with others on the team sees the side not play as a team, but eventually the twins make up, befriend another star of the team, Nikki Williams, and learn to work as a team, going to their first tournament in New York, where they play second and Heidi wins the MVP. And then later in the final game of the season, they end up winning. And despite being injured, Heather does suit up and plays a part in earning the Sea Kings win. Lauren, you said that this was one of your favorite movies. What do you like about the movie so much that it is your favorite?
I've been a basketball fan my whole entire life. This movie came out when I was turning five, or I was five in 2002. And just being like a young basketball fan back in the day, it was just so cool to see a movie about women's basketball players, especially because the WNBA was, 5 years old at that time. So it was just cool, like the rise of women's sports in general was on. And I think that's just why it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think that's, so important, especially in a time when the WNBA was quite new. You want to sort of elevate the stories of women's basketball players, and especially in relation to the WNBA, as we learn that Heidi and Heather made appearances in the WNBA as well. And so I think that, at the time it was probably really important to get a story like this just elevate the story and have it be told.
Yep, completely agree.
Yeah. I don't know, like in terms of the film itself, you mentioned that it was a Disney movie before, and I think this is the first Disney Channel original movie that we've done. Double Teamed was produced and released as a TV movie. We've done plenty of Disney movies on Goals on Film before, but I don't think a Disney Channel original movie. I don't know, like I fear that I'm going to be going into like Stewie territory here because he's not here. But he's been a bit critical of a few of our Disney movies that we've done on this podcast. And I fear that I'll turn into him for this episode, which may, shock you, may shock the listeners. But I don't know, it just to me felt very Disney Channel original movie-like. And I don't know if that hindered how I viewed the film as an overall product, in terms of it just I just felt like it was very much like a Disney movie as opposed to like a biographical movie. And just like the sort of progression of it all, I just didn't really feel like it was properly sort of like dramatized as being like a biographical look at these people's lives.
I am critical of that thing, because kind of like what we've seen in general of Disney, of DCOMs in general, is they're like, if it's a biographical thing, if it's about a story and everything back in the 2000s, it never hit on a main biographical storyline. in the sense of like what you said, like with dramatization, it's just like it never, you know, clicked with that. So yes, it is definitely like a DCOM movie, very Disney-esque, like a Disney movie would be. So I would agree with you on that. But I think the main thing was to attract the younger viewers. And by attracting the younger viewers, like me when I was a kid, they had to make it stem away from a true biographical film.
Yeah, I think like for me, like, yeah, I think that that's true. I think that it was less of, you know, a biographical film sometimes, but like obviously based on real life people. Yeah, I think it was less of a biographical film sometimes and more so just a Disney movie about twins growing up playing basketball. And it obviously just happened to be, you know, a little bit reflective of the lives of Heidi and Heather Burge.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that, you know, some of it was just like really sort of like two-dimensional. It was just like, you know, this is what's happening. I just didn't really see, you know, any of the characters really like get into it as we sort of see with biographical movies. And, you know, it's just very sort of like formulaic in terms of, you know, what actually happened and, you know, what sort of what they chose to show in terms of the lives of these two players.
Yeah, I think a lot of the storylines of Heather and Heidi were definitely rushed. That's like you said, it's kind of like how Disney rolls with a lot of their things. So I feel like if they would have, you know, gotten into a lot of like the nitty gritty of like the scouts being there instead of just like showing them for like 2 seconds and like how like Heather initially really got into basketball, because there's no way she just got into basketball by the coach just looking at her and being like, oh, you're tall. Like,
how tall are you?
I don't know. Just south of 6 feet, I guess. My sister's just as tall.
There's two of you?
Yeah, my twin.
Thank you, God.
It's kind of just like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, try out basketball. But like, why? I wish they got more into the whys.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that that would have been really good to show in terms of, yeah, just the sort of direction that the girls took in terms of learning about basketball, wanting to be part of the team, and why they sort of stuck with that, with basketball in the end as well. Yeah, so I think like a bit of that backstory and like diving deeper into that would have been really good. But I think like another thing with Disney is that like they always like to sort of play up a bit of, you know, values. And, you know, as you said, like Disney Channel movies, they often have like, you know, themes and everything relating to, yeah, just values that, you know, they want to teach the kids that these sort of movies are aimed towards and, you know, predominantly. And I think that, you know, what Double Team did is more so that as well, in terms of, you know, not so much focusing on the twins and their like basketball and their rise to becoming WNBA players, but as we see with Disney, like, you know, they want to focus on the values and what something means to, you know, specific people. And you know, in this one it was, you know, everyone's got to come together and work as a team to get the results that they want and work through differences. And you know, like maybe that was what the producers and the directors of this movie were focusing on more so as well.
I would definitely agree with that assessment.
Cool. We will go into a bit about the historical aspects of this movie. As we said, this film is based on the life stories of twin sisters Heidi and Heather Burge. And so we'll have a look at, yeah, a bit of the historical aspects, because there are a few things that, you know, the film gets right in terms of the girls' upbringing. And like, I didn't really see too much in any of my research that sort of suggested that the film strayed too differently. obviously we talked about how they might not have gone in depth and just like sort of, you know, rode it pretty like, you know, straight line, you know, throughout the film about these two people, just like in terms of them being volleyball players to start out with, them going to Palos Verdes High School to get noticed by scouts, and then eventually picking up the game of basketball, and then them making it to the WNBA. I think that all of those are, you know, pretty much true, and, you know, exactly how it sort of happened in real life as well. But we've got a few, you know, little tweaks, I guess, or a little bit of just, we'll dive deeper into these sorts of things. And so I think the first, inside the first 5 minutes of the film, we see the girls practicing in the gym, practicing volleyball. And someone comes up to their dad and is like, you know, don't you want them to be noticed by scouts? They're not going to be noticed by scouts if they're at this particular school. And so, Lauren, you were mentioning there that you, you know, in terms of the comments saying, you know, you can't, or scouts can't really talk to you until you're a senior. Do you have any more information on just how sort of true that was for the time?
I think so. A lot of college recruiting for women was starting in the 80s. Like the first NCAA women's basketball game was like really kind of, it was in the 1890s, but like Title IX here in the US really, the rise of college women's hoops was coming in the 80s. So I think basically like the rules back then were kind of new. So how can you scout women versus men? So girls versus boys, back in, you know, high school. So I think the accuracy of that was they were trying to kind of, you know, figure it out back then. And it was like, you couldn't get calls or anything, or talk to until your senior year of high school, but they can still look and analyze you. Whereas now you start getting offers when you're in like eighth grade or freshman in high school. So I think that was pretty accurate for the 1980s and the mid-1980s back then.
Yeah. And then something else that happened in the sort of late 1980s but didn't really eventuate until the late 1990s was a women's professional league, so the WNBA. And we had a comment by the Sea Kings coach at the end where he was saying to the girls and their family, you know, continue pressing the basketball career of these two people, you know, have them go to basketball camps. And the dad's like, you know, yeah, we'll send them to college to be basketball players as well. And the coach is like, oh, there might be more. You know, I hear there's talk of a women's pro league.
Basketball camps this summer. Your girls have a big future.
Oh, yeah. We're going to play college ball.
Maybe more. There's talk of a women's pro league.
And so, yeah, bearing in mind that this movie is set in 1985 as well, sort of the comment about a women's pro league being in, like, you know, development or something like that. Lauren, do you have any more sort of, yeah, anything else to say about how the progression of the, or the concept of a women's pro league was sort of identified and came to fruition in the late 90s?
Yeah, so I'm gonna like kind of backtrack to like the 80s around the time with like the coach was saying these comments and kind of just progress to the 90s, late 90s. So a lot happened with women's basketball in the 1980s. University of Southern California, they just made a documentary, The Woman of Troy, about that team. It had WNBA legends on it. And actually, a tidbit that a lot of people might not know is that former NBA commissioner David Stern had a lawyer who came with him to everything, and by the name of Val Ackerman. And she actually, in the 1980s, was pressing about starting a women's basketball league in the U.S. because there was no like legitimate league in the U.S. back then. There were like two, like the women's basketball league and the American Basketball League, but those only lasted like a few years in the 90s. So there was nothing. So everyone had to go overseas to play. So if you wanted to play professional women's basketball, you had to go to Europe. You had to go to even like the Middle East. Like you couldn't, there's nothing in the US. So the talks of what the coach said to the family of there's talks of a women's league and everyone being like, what? Is actually very historically true because of Val Ackerman. And in 1996, essentially the US Olympic women's team with all these legends was basically going to be the deciding factor of, is there going to be a women's professional league? And it was started in 1997 originally, like that was the inaugural season, but it was approved in April of 1996. I believe it was April, definitely 1996. And David Stern told Val that she was going to be the first president. So all of Val's hard work and everything and like encouragement of getting a women's league associated with the NBA back, you know, back then came to fruition. And I think that was actually a pretty cool tidbit that not a lot of people know. And Val is still involved in sports. She's the Big East commissioner right now. So it's just kind of cool to see that there was also, you know, like a male coach back in the 80s that was supportive of a pro women's league too, like in the movie. So I think that's kind of pretty important for some people to know that that was an accurate thing, even if the WNBA didn't become a thing until the 1990s.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And yeah, it's great to sort of have that confidence in someone who, yeah, would be so instrumental in creating a women's, or yeah, being instrumental in the helping of creating a women's pro league as well. And I think that, yeah, you definitely get a few people in, you know, a lot of leagues that, you know, have come in the last sort of 20, 25 years and focused predominantly on female development and female growth of particular games and sports. And, you know, you always have the people who are sort of like the trailblazers of a particular sport and especially for women. And so, yeah, it was good to see that that was the case for the WNBA as well.
Exactly. And even though like the Twins, they were older when they, you know, joined the WNBA and they're only there for a few seasons. That was the case with a lot of the WNBA players in the 90s. So it's cool just to kind of see that, like, even though they were older, they were still, you know, being developed to be able to play in a league that, you know, could fulfill their dreams without having to leave the country.
Yeah. And we'll get into a bit of that now as well. And so Heidi, she entered the league in that inaugural season in 1997, playing for the Los Angeles Sparks. And then in 1998, she played for the Washington Mystics. And it wasn't until 1999 that Heather joined the competition playing for the Sacramento Monarchs. And yeah, so, I mean, like you said, it was sort of short-lived for both of them. And, you know, could have been reflective of the ages that they were at the time. And obviously, you know, I think for a new competition, you want as much sort of talent as you can get, especially in those early stages. And I think for them even to play one or two seasons was big, you know, at the time as well. Obviously, learning the story of these two, you know, 10 years earlier as well, and then them coming into a women's professional league, I think was really important for them and the league itself. But we had a scene at the end as well where it was sort of a flash forward to Heather and Heidi's time or becoming WNBA players.
Listen up, big sis. It's going to be a long night for you.
I don't think so. One second best, always second best.
And it was a Los Angeles Sparks and Sacramento Monarchs game, you know, essentially, because we saw both Heather and Heidi walk out in their respective playing tops and get ready for the jump ball. But that wasn't actually true. That didn't actually play out at all, did it?
Correct. So Heather and Heidi never played with each other past college and never played against each other in the WNBA. So that was definitely an inaccuracy. Which honestly, like, I wasn't actually upset about, because I thought it was the perfect Disney move to basically show that, like, them two made it to the WNBA. And that's not to say that, like, the Sparks and the Monarchs didn't play each other, because they did. It was just a matter of when Heidi was on the team versus, like, when Heather was on the team, because they, you know, they, like you said, entered the leagues in two different years. So, also, for context, for anyone who doesn't know, the Sacramento Monarchs no longer exist. But it's just, like, I'm not mad at that. I thought that was pretty cool. Just to, like, at least see. And then Heather being, like, want second best. So, you know, putting those lines back right before they tip the ball off. I thought it was really good. Even if it wasn't, you know, accurate, I just thought that was just, like, the perfect flash forward to show that, like, a WNBA, or rather a professional women's sports league known as now the WNBA, did become a thing. I thought it was great. Even though it wasn't accurate, I liked it.
Yeah, I think it was really good to see as well. Like, despite not being accurate, I think it was really good to see, because, you know, it sort of confirmed that, you know, a women's pro league was developed and was created, and that these two players did make it. And yeah, I was fine with, you know, the inaccuracy of them playing together. I think that, yeah, most of all, like, it was important to show that they both made it to this particular stage of their careers, and yeah, essentially it was played pretty well each other, like, throughout those WNBA years as well, despite how short-lived they were. But yeah, I think that it was really important to for the audience to see that they did make it to this point in their careers, and you know, that they were still able to, like, have fun and have banter on the court, as you said with that comment, Lauren.
Exactly. And, like, I mean, if we're, like, going to be, you know, real here, they both played the center position. They were both, you know, centers and forwards. Obviously, when Heidi is announced on the team, when they announce, you know, the starters, she's announced as a forward and Heather's announced as a center. But, that's what happened when you have two twins who are, like, well, Heather's described as sub-6 foot, so she's, I would assume, 5'11". But then when Heidi's announced as a starter, she's, like, 6'1". So I would just, like, you know, be, like, a happy, like, 6 foot type of thing. Mm-hmm. That's what happens when you have tall post players in high school, and, like, good, you want to start at that. One of them has to be a forward and one of them has to be a center. Like, that's just, you know, that's how the cookie crumbles there. But if, like, let's say, like, they did play against each other, there would be banter like that. They would be tipping off and, like, against each other, like in reality, that probably would have happened if that was ever able to happen.
Just a couple of other sort of tidbits about the movie and its sort of historical aspects and the placing upon certain things with a movie that's set in 1985. There's a scene where the twins are learning the jump shot, and someone who's teaching them says that's how Magic Johnson won back-to-back MVPs. Now, this film's set in 1985, and Larry Bird actually won back-to-back MVPs in 1984 and 1985 and would win again in 1986. And it was 1987 that Magic Johnson won the MVP. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I just wonder when, you know, the script writers are doing this, like, what sort of research they do, because, you know, they're both, you know, famous basketballers in their own right. And I don't think it would have, you know, changed much if you did actually have it saying Larry Bird. That's how Larry Bird won back-to-back MVPs, just to make it a bit more accurate on the time.
Yeah, I agree. Because they're both studs. They're both Hall of Famers. So it's not like, it's not like it should be hard to distinguish the two. And, like, instead of, like, with the script writers, you would think that they would, like, research, I mean, Google existed in 2002. You would think they would just hop on Google, be like, who won MVP in 1985? Who won a, like, to actually make sure it's accurate. You would think, like, the actors would also be like, wait, no, that wasn't, like, that's Larry Bird. Like, you would think so. So I mean, I have no idea what was in their minds. Like, I could not even guess, because it's such an easy thing to just look up. Even like books, just look it up in like any books. Ask some like random person outside of an arena who was MVP in this, and they'll probably know. So I don't get how you can make that kind of mistake so easily.
Yeah, and
not like, even on the same team.
And like that year, that 1987 year where Magic Johnson did win, you know, his first MVP, it wasn't even like the year after was the year that he went back to back. So the year after Michael Jordan won the MVP, and then the 2 years after that, so in 1989 and 1990, that was when Magic Johnson won the back-to-back MVP. So it wasn't even like, yeah, it was basically like 5 years after this movie was set that Magic Johnson did indeed go back-to-back.
And that's like recent years too for like adults, you know, writing a script in 2002. That's for all intents and purposes a recent year. So like, just how did they do that?
Mm.
Like I will never understand it.
A couple of other things visible on the streets are a few cars and an SUV from the filming year, which is 2002, and not when the film was set in 1980. They didn't have cars that looked like that at the time. Cans of Coke and Sprite, they have the early 2000s design instead of the proper 1980s style. One of the party goers is wearing a Pearl Jam t-shirt, and they weren't really well known until 1991. There are modern compact discs by the stereo in the scene where they're at Nikki's house at the party, whereas in the 1980s, records and the cassettes were the norm and were what was played at parties. But a few of the other things that sort of relate to basketball, the high school gym where the majority of the scenes are set, it actually displays championship banners from throughout the 1990s. Again, I just think that this is something that, you know, I can excuse maybe like cans of Coke looking different or something like that, but I think that if you are scouting somewhere to film a movie and you see championship banners from years following when you want your movie to be set, just like, it's an easy fix to like take them down, just to keep up the look and the aesthetic of when you actually want this movie to be set.
I agree, and like it's not hard to take down a banner from like the 1990s. It's really not, and I'm sure like the place, I'm sure it was filmed like an actual school, like an actual school gym, kind of like High School Musical was, you know, filmed at the real East High. So like, it's really not hard to ask the school, like when you're filming, be like, hey, can like y'all just like take these banners down and everything for XYZ amount of time that we're filming this movie in this gym. And I'm sure that the people who, you know, with like the athletics department, I guess, of that school would be like, okay, yeah, sure. Because it's not really like anything of like a big significance, because like the school like could just, you know, put it back up. Like if it was I'm not sure about this, but if it was filmed at Palos Verdes, like the real one, I'm sure that they could have accommodated for like 2 seconds to be like, okay, yeah, it's about two of our like star players, okay, yeah, sure, we'll take down like the 1990s stuff. But yeah. I mean, I couldn't tell you, you know, like where it was recorded off the top of my head, but if it was at Palos Verdes, then I'm sure they would have accommodated. I'm sure anyone would honestly would have accommodated.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it was filmed at the real Palos Verdes High School, but I agree. I feel like, you know, if you've been selected, if your school's been selected to have a movie shot there, like I'd just accommodate any request, even if that was taking down championship banners for, yeah, a short while. Maybe, you know, it might not even have been like during the season, like their basketball season. And so, you know, no one would really look at them as much. And if it was like during a game, or, you know, maybe you just put them up during games, or, yeah, I don't know.
it also could have been shot in summer, and summer is normally, you know, like when, like here, like when high school workouts are. So like they don't need like a championship banner there for like, because like said, like there's no, you know, actual high school games going on in the, at least not here in the summer. So like no one was probably there.
Yeah.
So like why not, you know, take them down or even think of taking them down?
Yeah. Just a couple of other things to finish off. The basketball gym has a modern three-point line, which most schools didn't have until the late 1980s. I would obviously just guess that, you know, filming this movie in 2002, you know, you wouldn't really find a basketball court or gym that wouldn't have a modern three-point line. So I think that, yeah, they'd just have to work with that as best that they could. Similarly, you know, the basketball uniforms that the girls are playing throughout their high school years are the sort of modern singlets, baggy shorts, whereas in the 1980s, the uniforms fit a bit more tightly and the shorts were a bit shorter as well. And so, yeah, just a couple of other things that weren't really reflective of the time that this movie was set.
Yeah, and I don't think like those were, you know, like the biggest deal. Like myself personally, I only really like back, like when I was a kid, learned that the uniforms for the NBA players were like tighter and like the jerseys were more, you know, compact to their bodies, because of like collecting trading cards and then seeing in like, you know, sports books that I had. So like because they started doing the looser, you know, stuff back in like late 90s, like 90s to, you know, now. So I get like why they didn't do that, because I don't think a lot of, you know, like the younger generation that's watching this and are the targets would have really like noticed it. I back then definitely didn't notice it. When I watched it a few years ago, I noticed it. When I watched it like earlier today, I noticed it. So that's like different. And then the three-point line, I know a lot of people even now didn't actually know that there like wasn't a three-point line for the longest time, and just thought like Wilt Chamberlain just like made a lot of his shots from three when all of them were, you know, considered twos. So I think like that I'd excuse with as well. And like you said, like there's probably no place you could find that and have a three-point line unless it was like a random outdoor court, like the one at like the Burgess apartment building. Yeah. Like you're not gonna, you know, find it. And then I think it also would be unreasonable to ask any court, like established indoor wooden court, to alter their court for a no three-point line. So I excuse that. I'm just like, you kind of got to think on the three-point line accommodation at the time and if that was like a reasonable thing to ask. It, I personally don't think that'd be a reasonable thing to ask. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, I can excuse it as well, for the reason that, you know, I wouldn't expect, anywhere to have that modern three-point line, or to ask someone, hey, you know, can you draw up a three-point line reflective of the time, or, you know, just the court reflective of the time. It's something that I can excuse, just, you know, similarly to seeing the cans of Coke. Like, you know, I don't think it really like was added much value or took away from seeing it set in 1985, that they didn't have, you know, that they did have a modern three-point line instead. You know, yeah, it didn't really hinder like my viewing of it, in terms of like seeing it and pointing it out and that sort of like, yeah, bugging me at all. So yeah, I was completely fine with it. We'll now move into looking at how true the sport is depicted throughout the movie. And this can be both in the sort of play that they do within games and at training, and just sort of the progression of, you know, being a part of a high school team. And, you know, you spoke about the scouts earlier as well, Lauren, and how that, you know, scouting recruiting process worked. But how did you find, you know, throughout the movie, how the sport was depicted in yeah, all of those aspects that I outlined just then.
I think it was actually depicted really well. You can see, like, teammates sometimes, especially like when you're a new kid in school, don't really get along. Nikki was intimidated by Heather because of her height, and then she had like a natural skill, even though she's never played organized. Like, that's like a normal thing that you not only see like teenage girls, but you got teenage boys going through it. So I thought that the teammate dynamics and stuff, and then them finally, you know, like working together, just, I think that was representative really well on the team aspect. I think with practice, going at it down low, especially when you have two players who can establish themselves in the post, doing like high-low action from Nikki to either Heidi or Heather, depending on if they're wearing, you know, the red or the black jerseys for practice. I thought that was pretty accurate. I liked how the ball movement was also displayed, especially when all three of them learn how to move the ball together instead of Nikki just kind of playing a one-man ISO game and being what the coach describes her as, a selfish ball hog. So I thought that was pretty accurate too. And I would probably say the last thing that I thought was maybe not that accurate was you had both of them shooting threes, and that's not what post players did back then. That's more of a, you know, a modern thing where a lot of post players are becoming like a combo point forward, and I can name, you know, so many men and women players that are becoming more versatile with using their size and length athleticism to not only, you know, be dominant down low, but also shoot from beyond. And in college for them too, I think I recall that Heather was the one that actually preferred playing the inside game and Heidi preferred playing the outside game, like in real life. I probably could have gotten those mixed because they, you know, they played it on the same team, and then one, like, they had to play a different position. So I feel like it was Heidi that would extend beyond the arc, and then Heather kind of playing bully ball down low. And it showed both of them having versatility, which wasn't, you know, too accurate back in the day, but it also kind of showed the progression of the different types of players that men and women are in terms of position, which is translated now in the modern times.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with all of that. I think that, yeah, you're definitely going to get, for a film that's focused around high school and sort of teenagers on a team, you're certainly going to get that sort of dynamic of the team in terms of people working together or holding grudges and that coming through in both training and in games. I think that, yeah, with that sort of like age group, and, you know, you're going to have some people who are more dedicated than others. I think that you're always going to get that. And that's just obviously not just reflected in basketball either. And so I think that they showed that really well in terms of just like, yeah, the infighting, whether it was just between Heather and Heidi or them versus other people on the team. And it obviously like came across in their games in terms of them not playing for each other and then ending up losing. I think so. Yeah, you definitely do see that, and you definitely do get that in real life as well. And so I think that, yeah, the film really showed that in a good way. In terms of like, yeah, how the play actually happened out on the court in games, I agree with you that I thought like the sort of transition between passing the ball was done really well, whether the camera sort of focused on the person with the ball and just like where they were passing it, or even like just like the movements around the court. So even like when the camera was focused on, you know, someone's feet and just like their movements on the court, I think was pretty good. I think like the only thing that I have issue with in that regard came in that final game of the season. And so we saw we saw Heather be injured the night before the big game. And so she's like out for the entire game and there's 7 seconds to go. And she's like, you know, just stall as long as you can. And we see that she's suited up and she's like ready to take the court after, you know, injuring her ankle. And, you know, she wants to come on. And I don't really see how that could happen, like in terms of a player being injured and then just basically saying to herself and her team, like without saying it at the same time, like, hey, you should put me in. I want to go in. And I mean, she was an important part in that particular play, in terms of getting it to Heidi for that winning shot. But I just think that like the coach just like taking it on, being like, yeah, sure. You know, like I just don't see how a coach would properly risk that, especially with an injured player, even if Heather was going to be wide open. You know, when she got the ball, she was outside the 3-point line. So she could have easily had a shot. And as you were saying earlier, just before as well, how Heidi and Heather in this movie, like they weren't afraid to throw 3-pointers, despite, you know, whether they did or didn't in real life as well. And so I just think like that whole scene in terms of, you know, waiting with the ball, you know, there were 7 seconds to go. It seemed like that time went on for an eternity as well. I'm pretty sure, like, isn't there like an offensive like violation if you hold the ball too long or something like that as well?
Yeah, there is. It's 5 seconds.
Okay.
I think it's either 5 or 4 seconds in college. It's one of those. There's so many violations. Like, you know, there's 3 in the key. There's the 5 second on inbound. Like, there's a lot, but it's like 4 or 5 seconds. Yeah.
Okay.
So she actually, with the 7 seconds left and Heather having the ball, like, she would have committed the violation.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there was a travel in that as well. Like, she went one way and then, like, moved to another direction as well before she sort of, like, went into the paint and, you know, attempted to sort of like go to the rim and before she passed it. So I think that like, yeah, some of those things were just like maybe missed, whereas you had those instances. And then like also in the movie you had like an opposition coach like yelling at the ref and being like, all right, that's a technical, or that's, you know, a violation, and this the team will, the Sea Kings will get 2 shots. And so like I think that, yeah, there are a few things that in terms of rules that, you know, weren't really picked up on or were like allowed to like be let through, and that might have just been in terms of, yeah, as we sort of come back to like the storyline or the people involved in this film not being totally across what it could be, and so they sort of view, you know, abuse at a referee, which like I totally get, like I'm an umpire myself, you know, like that being so bad that that warrants a foul, compared to, you know, blatant sort of travels or other violations and just being like, play on.
I mean, you see that in real life too, like in like the NBA, the WNBA in college, like you see that, like players and coaches is getting texts for literally no reason, whereas like there are players who are committing travels that aren't called, or like very clear fouls that just aren't called. So like you'll see like that inconsistency. So I actually thought that was actually kind of funny how they depicted it back then when that still happens today.
Yeah. I think the only other thing that I like sort of made me like write down this particular moment and wanting to talk about it was I don't remember what game it was, but it was the one where the coach put Heidi in to shoot some free throws towards the end of the game. And the dad's in the stands and like he just like he sees Heidi and he's like, no, Heather's the star player. And he basically just like runs onto the court to talk to the coach. And I'm like,
yeah,
I'm not sure how you could do that. I'm not sure like that's allowed, like entering essentially like the playing arena, entering the court just to talk to your coach and be like, hey, you've got this wrong. This isn't what, like, this isn't how it's meant to go. Hope you don't lose because of this or something like that. Like, I just thought that that was sort of like so fascinating that you just allow someone to run onto the court.
Exactly. Actually, I think that was those were the technical free throws.
Yeah.
That same game. So yeah, I just thought that was hilarious. So I remember back like when I first watched it years and years ago, that I was just like, that can't happen. Like, why is a parent running onto the court to like talk to their like kids coach like that? And that's not a thing. And even now, just looking at that, I'm like, if someone did that, like you're taken out of that arena, like you're gone.
Yeah.
And that's just like not a thing that like that happens. So I think that was also a big part of like the Disney type of like curveball over there. That's just like one of the Disney things. And yeah. I just thought that was just so funny. And it's not to say that like parents don't run onto the court and everything, because I mean that happens. Like those, you know, overbearing parents, like he was to the twins. So, but like that's just like not a thing that like is permissible. So I thought that was just kind of really funny when that happened. And also just him being like, not having like any faith in Heidi. I was like, come on, man. Like, that's your daughter. Like, and if the coach believed in the decision to have Heidi shoot the free throws, even like though their parents or their mom was just like, yeah, go Heidi, but like their dad and Heather didn't like really want it. Like, Heather was supportive of it and she was like, okay, like you got it. And then the dad was just like, I don't care if she has the hot hand. Like, come on, man. The coaches may not get everything right, but they see, you know, their players in a different way than like the parents are gonna see, you know, their players. So come on. Like, the coach thought Heidi could do it. Sure, she split them, but they won.
Yeah, so, that's right.
Got the ball back.
They did. Yeah, I think like it was either a Disney thing or it was just like a, you know, you can get away with some things in high school basketball sort of thing. I think that that's what it might come back to as well. All right, we'll go into a bit of looking at the acting performances right now. And so I'll just give you a run through of the main cast list. So we had Poppy Monroe as Heather Burge, Annie McElwain as Heidi Burge, Teal Redman as Nikki Williams, Nick Searcy as Larry Burge and Joey Miyashima as Wendell Yoshida, who was the coach. So looking at that cast list and maybe like the actors in general as well in terms of, just how they sort of portrayed the real life counterparts, and especially in the case of Heidi and Heather, what did you make of the cast and their performances throughout the movie?
I thought that Poppy, Annie, and Teal all did very well in depicting basketball players, because when you're like a high school basketball player, you're not going to expect to be as developed and as, you know, fit in everything as like college players and pro players. So I thought they actually did really well in kind of showing that, like, the development of them becoming like the talent, like the hoopers they are. It also looked like they, you know, knew how to play basketball, because you had Teal already like going with behind and between the legs dribbles, and you had Poppy, who already could do up and unders like there was no tomorrow. So like I thought that like them three just did very well. And then I just thought that Nick seriously played a great role of an overbearing parent who is like sports only and like no drama club, no anything, like it has to be basketball. And like, even at first, obviously it was volleyball, but like, I thought that like, he played that so well. And then Joey Miyashima really did kind of play a coach in like the goofy manner type of thing, but it was really accurate. And the fact of being like, coaching teenage girls and stereotype could be like stereotypically is kind of just like them, you know, want to do everything for themselves and like not listening, and him being like, come on girls, pass it to Heather, pass it to Heidi, Nikki, don't be a ball hog. Like, I thought he did that perfectly.
Yeah, I think that Poppy and Annie, like, they definitely gave off that effect that, you know, they were playing sisters, and like they played sisters really well. I think, yeah, like we said a couple of times throughout it, you know, just in terms of like the dynamic that we see often between siblings, and, you know, especially twin sisters, I think in terms of like them wanting like the same thing, and, you know, playing basketball, wanting to be a star, but like also not be like, or not wanting the other to be like overbearing, like in the shadow of, you know, themselves. And so like, I think Poppy and Annie did really well with that. And then you bring in Teal Redman as well. And yeah, again, like we said, like just that dynamic of a high school basketball team and wanting to work together. I think that they played into that really well in terms of getting like an understanding about like just how, you know, people like interact within a high school basketball setting or a high school sports setting, when there are so many players who are capable of being like, you know, a star player. And so like, I think that those three worked really well together, you know, whether it was that they were all going against each other or when they made up towards the end of the movie as well. Yeah, I liked Nick Searcy as Larry. The girl's father, I think that he played a really good role in being like that overbearing father, and that parental figure, you know, like always saying that what he does is for the best interests for the girls. And but then again, like, you know, he came across as being that type of person, but then he also came across as being someone who just like didn't care either.
Yeah.
And so like, I think that he played like both of those, or like they sort of like went in like, you know, hand in hand, like one of the same, like, you know, whatever way you look at his character in terms of wanting the best for the girls or not caring, like it all comes back to like the same sort of delivery of that character. And so like, yeah, I think that he did really well. And yeah, you mentioned Joey Miyashima as the coach. I reckon he was my favorite character in this whole movie, to be honest. And
he's so funny.
I mean, we'll get to like a bit of the relatability in the next segment as well. But yeah, I think that he, again, like, you know, you saw on one hand the frustration that he had with his team, and then you saw on the other hand that, you know, celebrating the success, having the faith in his team. And I think that like that faith was always there with him, and like that frustration that he showed was just because he knew that this team was a good team and they just needed to work through their differences. So again, like two sides of the coin come together to create this character and play this character really well in terms of, yeah, just, you know, being this character, that being this sort of like mentor role in terms of that typical like basketball coach who wants, you know, his team to succeed and knows that his team can. And yeah, just all the frustration grew because he knew that he had a winning team and they just needed to prove it. And, you know, he had a lot of fun along the way.
Exactly. I would agree. And then what I would say in response, I would be in the next segment.
All right, well, let's go into the next segment. We've looked at, yeah, the characters and the actors and their performances, and we'll look now of whether any of these characters related to us in any way, whether it was a character as a whole, a particular aspect of a certain character, or maybe it was just a line the character said throughout the movie. So was there anyone throughout this movie that it was for you, Lauren?
I think that like I could relate to all three of the girls in the sense of not really kind of like understanding other people, whether it be just because of personality differences. Wouldn't say like I was ever really kind of jealous of my teammates back when I played or any sports that I played, but kind of just the feeling of like having to be in a constant competition with each other, and all three of them were in constant competition with each other to see who could be the best. I think I've related just to all of them, and also they all ended up with a really, you know, good work ethic. Mm-hmm. And that's what I strive to have when I was an athlete back in my day. So, like, I think I relate to all of them, really, in, like, the different areas. Especially with Heather when she, you know, twists her ankle and stuff. I've done that numerous times back when I played basketball and tennis. Like, I would be practicing so hard that I would injure myself. Like, I really related to that. So I think all of the girls, I really have a lot that I can relate to. And then, like with coach, I think I can relate to the frustration of the personality dynamics and knowing that, like, your team has what it takes with the talent, but, like, doesn't really, like, understand it yet. And I can really kind of, like, relate to that just from, like, coaches to me and coaches to my teammates when I played. 'Cause, like, even, like, interpersonal exchange and, like, general, not even related to sports, it's, like, I've had, like, teachers who, like, told me, and then I had teachers who were, like, you can do this, and, like, I'm going to work with you, and this is how, and then when you achieve this goal, it's going to, like, be, like, the best thing on earth, and which happened, and that coach, you know, believed in his girls, and that's kind of just, like, interpersonally with, like, coaches that I had, or, like, teachers I had in general, you know, like, prominent adult figures in my life, who, like, you know, encouraged me and, like, encouraged my, you know, my friends, my teammates, and honestly, like, anyone in this world who had, like, an adult figure that, like, encouraged them and said that, like, you can do this and helped you through and, like, you know, made you feel like, yes, like, I can do this, like, you know, the good self-confidence. That's how I can relate to the coach. I'm not a coach, but, like, having, like, experienced that in the receiving end, I think that's how I can relate.
Yeah, no, that's a great answer. We've gone into a lot of more depth of how I've thought about answering this question. I think for me, like, it's the coach as well. Purely based on, like, those growing frustrations, you know, of, like, wanting to get this team together, wanting to make this team work together, and just, like, seeing it not play out how you want and just, like, being frustrated. I think that there was, like, a time when I think, like, they were in training and I think Nikki had, like, one of Heidi or Heather open, like, in the paint and just, like, decides to go for a three-pointer or a jump shot or something like that, despite the coach being like, pass it to them. And yeah, so Nikki puts up this shot, and the coach is just like, Nikki, like, he's, like, internally and externally screaming. He's like, this is not what I want, but, like, it's obviously working. It, like, you know, they're getting the points, but they're not, like, doing the plays that he wants. And so, like, he's just, like, visibly, like, angry, but, like, without being, like, super, like, looking super angry at the same time. It's more just like a, whatever, like, like, you know, and then, like, in the same instance, like, he's surprised that, like, you know, these players are putting up unopposed jump shots, and then, like, he gets surprised that, you know, a block happens as well. He's just like, what, my team's capable of this? Yeah, so I think that was really funny. And then, like, as we sort of said before, like, he's just, like, witty sort of comebacks to particular people. You know, like we mentioned, the scene where the dad runs onto the court and is like, you know, Heather's the star player, Heidi shouldn't be taking these free throws. And the coach is just like, Heidi's got the hot hand at the moment, and you've got a hot head, so sit down. Like,
yeah,
I just, like, love that. Like, he was able to put them in their place.
It was so awesome to see. And, like, even going on that, being like, he wasn't, like, a coach that, like, shoot out a player. He was a coach that was just, like, problem solving type of coach, and it works in the end.
Yeah.
So it's basically kind of like what you were saying, and it's just, he was, like, one of those, like, positive impact type of coaches and, like, patient, and not, you know, like, I'm gonna scream at you and not help solve the problem type of thing. Said he just have, like, those funny witty comebacks.
Yeah, like he wasn't a hard-nosed coach. Like he knew what his team was capable of and was like wanting to get there, you know, with a, you know, pretty chill approach, you know, despite all the growing frustrations. And so like, I think to like keep your cool in those sorts of situations and just like let things play out, is certainly like reflective of me. Like I'm just like someone who, you know, it'll work out in the end. And so like, I think that that's what it sort of comes back to for me. And then just like another little like funny relatability that I have is when Heidi and Heather are going to Palos Verdes, and I think it's their first day and they're looking for a particular club to join. And I think they're looking at the languages club. And it's Heidi who chooses Italian class, I think, just because she likes pizza. And I'm like, that's something that I would do as well.
What do you think? Spanish or Italian for my foreign language?
I don't know.
Let's just go. I do like pizza. Make it Italian.
yeah, so I found that a bit funny and something that I would do as well. Base my selections off.
I just liked also that scene how Heather at the same time said Italian. I was just like, that's the twin thing. I loved it.
Yeah. we are coming up to the end of the episode now. So we do go into the segment which asks, if you could have a basketball movie get made, what would it be and why? Lauren, have you come up with an idea for this?
Oh, man. It's so hard because, like, there are so many, like, you know, really good basketball movies, and they are coming up with a lot more women's basketball movies now, mm-hmm. about, you know, different teams, like the Women of Troy. Then they're coming up with, you know, ones on like Maya Moore, just all these different ones. I really, really want to see a movie completely dedicated to the 1997 WNBA season. I think that'd be like so cool to have like interviews of like the 1997 Comets, of like different, you know, impact players who were drafted in 1997, even players that weren't past coaches, and like their thoughts also, like a kind of like a flashback type of thing. 25 years later, because it's the 25th anniversary of the WNBA was last season. So, like 25, 26 years later, like the growth, I think that would be something like really cool to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd definitely watch that. I think that's really interesting. My idea for this, is focused around the WNBL, and
oh, I want to hear this.
Yeah. It's more so like, I feel like a major difference between what we see of the WNBL now and the NBL as well is that the WNBL more so goes into particular markets where there is no NBL team, or like they'll go more sort of like regionally. And so you have like Bendigo, and you know, they're up in the country Victoria. And so like, it's more so looking at, yeah, just that like market of WNBL teams going out regionally or in towns or cities where there isn't a sort of like big sort of basketball market or like a men's basketball market. And so like you even have, you know, Canberra Capitals, you've got, you know, Townsville Fire, who, you know, they had the Townsville Crocodiles in the NBL as well, but they're now, you know, defunct. And so I think that, yeah, for me, it's just a look at the WNBL and sort of like why they move into these particular markets and, you know, to potentially get interest in these new areas, and just like sort of the benefit of doing so, benefit of moving out from major capital cities, and yeah, just growing their market and growing their demographic and taking basketball to regional centers and just growing a fan base in other parts of the state or other parts of the country.
Yeah, as a Melbourne Boomers fan, I like that. I approve. I'd love to see any like movie documentary type of thing about the WNBL. So that's really interesting. I'd watch that too.
Yeah. So that does now bring us to the end of the episode. So Lauren, would you like to share your social media and any place where our viewers can find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at lrosenberg101.
Awesome. And you can find me on both Twitter and Instagram at jspervs. You've been listening to Goals on Film. You can find Goals on Film on Twitter and Instagram at Goals on Film Pod. Goals on Film is part of the Edge of the Crowd network. You can find Edge of the Crowd on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, and TikTok at Edge of the Crowd. You can also view any of our stories, be it sport, culture, or politics, on our new look website, www.edgeofthecrowd.com. Until next week, thanks for listening.